Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, August 29th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital and its new podcast, The Fourth Trimester, Redefining the Reality of Postpartum Depression, at the hospital's maternal mental health support group, saratogahospital.org/voices. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Ujas Shah. Dr. Shah is a surgeon with St. Peter's Hepatobiliary, Pancreatic, and General Surgery. He specializes in general, laparoscopic, and endocrine surgery, including thyroid nodules, thyroid cancer, hypothyroidism, Graves' disease, and minimally invasive robotic adrenal surgery. You want to join the conversation today? Give us a call early, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We'll meet Dr. Shah and take your calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us on this Medical Monday is Dr. Ujas Shah. Dr. Shah is a board-certified general surgeon with St. Peter's Hepatobiliary, Pancreatic, and General Surgery. He specializes in endocrine surgery and treats diseases of the thyroid, parathyroid, and adrenal glands. His professional interests include minimally invasive laparoscopic and robotic general surgery procedures. You want to be a part of the conversation today? Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number if you have a question for Dr. Shah. 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But once again, and I'll say it about a billion times through the show, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Shah, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. Let's start at a very basic level for me and for anybody else who really doesn't know much about the endocrine system. Why don't you take us on a little guided tour through the endocrine system, its major parts, what it does, and why it is important.
Sure. Thank you so much. So the endocrine system is something that many people are aware of and being responsible for hormones that have various types of activities throughout the body. There's a lot of regulation and counter-regulation of these various hormones, and they overall regulate just about every organ system in our body. The endocrine glands that I most deal with are the thyroid gland, the parathyroid gland, and the adrenal glands. And these, again, have various functions, and they can cause problems with hormone imbalances, with either producing too much or too little thyroid hormones in general. And endocrine glands in general can also develop masses and cancers, which need to be treated with surgery among and additional to other options to take care of these problems.
I've heard of hyperthyroidism and hypothyroidism, both of which I understand, or at least I think I understand, can be treated at times with medication. You are a surgeon. When do you step in?
Right. So speaking in broad terms, hypo and hypothyroidism affect obviously too much or too little thyroid hormone in the body. And this can throw off your entire body's metabolism and having specific effects in different organs. Now, that's right. These can be treated medically at times, especially hyperthyroidism. That's one of the problems where surgery is needed, because medications aren't really great at treating some forms of hyperthyroidism definitively, and all medications do have some side effects.
Where is the thyroid gland located?
Yeah, so the thyroid gland is situated in the neck, just at the base of the neck in front of the trachea or windpipe.
And I've seen, the reason I know where it is, and I ask you the question anyway, is because long ago, my grandmother had thyroid surgery, and there was a little scar right here in the front of her neck. And when, in the old days, when you had thyroid surgery, did they just take the thyroid out, or could you actually, even 50, 100 years ago, do minor surgery on the thyroid?
Yeah, so thyroid surgery has evolved over years, and so it's gone through phases, and one of the most common reasons for doing thyroid surgery is for nodules in the thyroid, and there's been phases during the history where people have tried to do surgery from just taking out a nodule. Then it's become evolved to where a lot of people would take out the entire thyroid gland, and we've kind of phased into a time now where a lot of people do surgery to take out just half of the thyroid or the entire thing. We typically don't favor surgery to take out nodules anymore, because we know that it's prone to complications that we now can avoid by doing kind of a more cleaner surgery.
How does one know that one has a nodule on his thyroid?
Yeah, so thyroid nodules most of the time are kind of found completely by accident. They're found incidentally, which just kind of means when an X-ray or CT scan or an ultrasound is done for some other reason and happens to catch the thyroid gland in the field of view, and the thyroid appears to have a nodule in it. And that's typically the most common way that these are found. Now, additionally, on routine physicals with the people's primary care providers, when the neck is felt, the nodules can sometimes be felt. And occasionally, people will notice the nodules themselves if they feel like there's something stuck in their throat, they're having trouble swallowing, or pain when they swallow.
Let's talk quickly and then we'll get to the phones. The number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Ujesh Shaw, who is part of the St. Peter's, we'll call it general surgery, so I don't have to say hepatobiliary too many times during the program here today. And the number to call once again is 800-348-2551. You do many things with robotic general surgery. And going back to when I assume that my late lamented grandmother had her surgery in the 40s, I want to say, or 50s, can you use these robotic techniques, these minimally invasive techniques, to do some of these adrenal gland or thyroid gland surgeries?
Yeah, so starting with the adrenal gland first, definitely the robot is used and is used frequently to do minimally invasive adrenal surgery. So that involves using a few small incisions instead of a large incision across the abdomen, usually along one side. And that's a really great technique to avoid the large incisions that were previously needed for these. It decreases patient's pain and improves recovery after surgery. In thyroid surgery, there's a much more limited role of robotics, unfortunately. And the reason being, thyroid surgery is a lot more delicate in terms of things that we worry about at the time of surgery. And we know that using robotics, there's actually is a slightly increased risk of complications to things that are really important, such as the nerves that control your voice. And so that's one of the reasons why it's very, very rarely used nowadays for thyroid surgery.
What's the most common ailment that affects an adrenal gland?
So adrenal glands are similar to the thyroid glands, can develop nodules, and that's kind of the most common thing is what's called an adrenal incidentaloma, and an incidental nodule in the thyroid. We know that when people get CAT scans for one reason or another of their abdomen, the adrenal glands are caught on these CAT scans, and about 4% of the time there's some sort of nodule in the adrenal gland, and that's the most common reason that things, abnormalities are found.
How big is the adrenal gland?
Normally, it's only a couple centimeters in size, and it kind of is flattened like a pancake. But you can get nodules that can be sometimes many centimeters in size. I mean, once they're hitting about 4 to 6 centimeters in size, we worry that they could be a cancer. But the adrenal gland typically is less than just a couple centimeters.
Interesting. So the nodules can be much bigger than the actual gland itself.
Correct. And those nodules, when they get so big, they can be pushing on things around the adrenal gland, such as the kidney, or sometimes even the major blood vessels, such as the aorta and the vena cava, or organs around the system, that the area like the stomach or liver.
Can you live without an adrenal gland?
Yeah, so we can. So one of the most common reasons we do surgery for the adrenal gland is when there's too much hormone being produced from a nodule on one of the adrenal glands. Fortunately, our bodies are designed with two adrenal glands, and so if we were to do surgery to take one out, most people as other adrenal glands, when they're totally normal, will make just a little bit more hormone than they previously were and make up for it. And so people will be functioning just fine without their...
Well, I think this will be a fascinating program. We'll get to the calls in a moment here. We'll take a quick break. We're joined by Dr. Ujesh Shaw of St. Peter's Health Partners. The number is 800-348-2551. Email voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop. It's a Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We're joined on this Medical Monday by Dr. Ujesh Shaw of St. Peter's Health Partners. And let's go to our phone lines. We go to Western Mass. And Ruth, you're first.
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
Hi. This is a real coincidence because I was just listening before your show to Radio Lab, which had a discussion about diagnoses, and one of them was enlarged thymus, and how in the, although that was an incorrect diagnosis, it was at the time treated with radiation. And I am one of those infants who was judged to have an enlarged thymus and had radiation to treat it. And in the program, they talked about 30,000 deaths, maybe more than that, from people who had this irradiation dying from thyroid cancer. And I had been, until I was about 40 years old, receiving questionnaires from a major teaching hospital in Rochester, New York, asking, you know, had I died yet? And I haven't gotten those questionnaires for a long time. But I wonder, Dr. Shah, if you have if you had any experience with repercussions from this kind of treatment other thyroid problems that people who've grown up having been irradiated as an infant might have had.
Yeah, so, well, first of all, just in terms of radiation to the thymus, fortunately, that's not something that's used too frequently today. That's something that had been used previously, as you mentioned. Radiation has been used for many conditions more liberally in the distant past, and we know that there are side effects of radiation. Any radiation that occurs near the neck, near the thyroid gland, has the possibility of causing thyroid cancer, and we know that external radiation is really one of the main known factors that can cause thyroid cancer. So you're right, thyroid cancer does occur more frequently in people who have had radiation treatment, whether it's for an enlarged thymus or whether it's, or if it's for some other reason, such as lymphoma as a child. So the recommendations are that people should be screened with a thyroid ultrasound to see if they have any nodules. And the workup for the thyroid nodule in somebody who's had radiation is still the same as it would be with anybody else, in that we wouldn't jump to surgery right away, but we'd get an ultrasound and do a biopsy and see. But if there's any concern, we do have a lower threshold of removing these thyroid glands in people who've had radiation because we know that there is a higher chance of thyroid cancer.
Ruth.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That sounds about right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call. I think we lost Ruth there, but apparently you got a thumbs up on your answer, Doctor. So you did very well for the first one. Let's go to Great Barrington. Jessica, you're on.
Hi, yes. Can you hear me? I'm not sure if my radio's on or off.
Go ahead. Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. I have suffered with hot flashes for at least 30 years. I'm postmenopausal. I've had an endocrinologist work me up, and all they keep telling me is, got to live with it. And I literally have flashes every half hour, sometimes more often, and it keeps me up, and there's got to be something. Do you have any ideas?
Thanks for the question. That's unfortunately a tough situation to be in because there are things that we can measure and assess for that that can cause hot flashes, and then there's other things that we don't really have good tests for. And I'm sure you've been through the ringer in terms of testing, and having high thyroid function is one of the causes, but not the only cause, unfortunately. So I think there's a lot of other tests that can be done, other hormones in general, but unfortunately it's hard to pinpoint this problem was when a lot of this testing has been normal.
Jessica.
Yeah, well, I was on Premarin for about 25 years, and I finally said, it's not healthy. Why am I doing this to myself? So is there any test in particular that you would recommend that might pinpoint something adrenal-related?
Yeah, from the adrenal standpoint, hot flashes are not typically kind of one of the more common symptoms. It's usually then also associated with problems with high blood pressures or palpitations, and screening for cancers of the adrenal glands may be reasonable if those things exist. But that's a rare tumor such as something called a pheochromocytoma, which wouldn't typically explain symptoms that have been going on for 30-plus years, unfortunately. So,
okay. Well, thank you very much for the call, Jessica. We appreciate it. And the number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We're joined by Dr. Uja Shah of St. Peter's, and let's go to Albany. And Linda, you're on.
Hi. I was just wondering, can you get an infection in your
thyroid gland. I noticed this weekend I had pain in my lower, the front where your thyroid is. And when I lay down, the pain is even worse. So I'm wondering, can you get an infection in your thyroid gland?
Yeah, so infections of the thyroid gland can happen. They are fairly rare, however. Most commonly, swelling near the thyroid is from a nodule, or it can be inflamed for other reasons, even without an infection. We know that there are several autoimmune conditions that cause irritation and inflammation of the thyroid gland. That can cause the thyroid gland to be enlarged. Again, usually not an infection per se that would be treated with antibiotics. The chance of infection is fairly rare. There's a lot of other glands in your neck, the lymph nodes, that can sometimes be infected more so than the thyroid gland. But in the front of your neck, it's rare, although not impossible, to develop an infection there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. We appreciate the call. It's Medical Monday on WAMC, 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Uja Shah of St. Peter's Hepatobiliary, Pancreatic, and General Surgery, and he specializes in endocrine surgery and treats diseases of the thyroid, parathyroid, and adrenal glands, and he has an interest in minimally invasive laparoscopic and robotic general surgery procedures. So that's what we're dealing with today, and let's go to Berkshire County. And Stephen, you're on.
Hey, Dr. Shah, for about 6 years, I had pain in my great toe on my left foot. And I saw a podiatrist, a rheumatologist, a neurologist, and they couldn't determine what was the problem. But one night I was admitted to the ER with pain in my abdomen, my sort of upper right side. And I guess they did an ultrasound. They said I had the beginnings of pancreatitis. They did an ultrasound of my thyroid, and they saw that one of my parathyroids was enlarged, greatly enlarged. And they scheduled me for surgery, and they took out the parathyroid. It was just day surgery. And my toe pain completely disappeared after every day and every night for 6 years. Is there a connection there?
Yeah, surprisingly enough, that's actually really that makes total sense. The parathyroid glands can become overactive for really random reasons, it seems like. And the main thing that we see is that when the parathyroid glands are enlarged, the parathyroid hormone levels are elevated, and that causes high blood calcium levels. And we don't know the exact reason, but people who have hyperparathyroidism, which it sounds like you were dealing with, can have pains almost anywhere. A lot of people describe bone pains, muscle pains, joint pains, and a lot of people feel them mostly in the hips and the knees and the back, but it can be almost anywhere, and including in the extremities and the toes. And again, we don't know exactly why these pains happen, but we do know that when people have successful surgery for primary hyperparathyroidism, that about 80% of people notice a significant improvement of these symptoms, including these pains that I have. And so I'm glad that was found for you, and hopefully that's never comes back. But that's there's debilitating pain that can be associated with primary hyperparathyroidism that we don't think about when we hear about the hormone, because the parathyroid glands, we think about just regulating blood calcium levels.
Stephen.
Yeah, so is it excess calcium in the toe or in the vessels or something?
Yeah. So again, we don't have a clear explanation for it. But what some of the thoughts are is that the parathyroid glands and the parathyroid hormone specifically are kind of leaching the calcium out of the bones, and that's causing some pain. It's unclear if that's truly what's going on. But we do know that the pains are associated with the disease.
All right, Stephen. Thanks a lot for the call. It's Medical Monday on WAMC. Dr. Uja Shah joins us today. And before we get to our email bag and then back to the calls, explain to me the connection between the thyroid and the parathyroid, and why did they call it the parathyroid?
Yeah. So surprisingly enough, the thyroid and the parathyroid are completely unrelated glands, other than the fact that they sit right next to each other.
I
so
see.
The thyroid gland was named so because it looks like a shield, and that's in the front of the neck. And that's the bigger of the two glands, and that sits right in front of the windpipe. There's two halves, right half and a left half. Just next to the thyroid are four tiny little glands that are called the parathyroid glands because they sit next to the thyroid, parathyroid. These were discovered later than the thyroid, and so that's why they're named after. There are four of them, two on each side, and like we kind of discussed earlier, they regulate the blood calcium levels. The reason they're important is because if you're doing surgery for one of these glands, you're going to be running into the other one of these glands. And so it's important to know about each of them separately and their function to make sure that they're addressed separately.
We're joined today by Dr. Ujesh Shah, and this email came in a while back. I've been having some trouble getting the email to load while you were talking, but I got it. This one says, good afternoon. Back in 2008, I was diagnosed with Graves' disease. My thyroid was destroyed with radioactive iodine. Since that time, my TSH levels have been in the normal range with the exception of the most recent one, which showed a level of 6.92 TSH. My question is, what would cause such a drastic change? My weight is stable, albeit maybe slightly underweight. I'm 66, otherwise in good health. And that is from Anonymous. Before you do that, explain what the TSH level is.
Yes, the TSH refers to thyroid-stimulating hormone, and that's a blood test that we can do to assess your thyroid function. If the thyroid function is too low, the TSH is elevated. It's kind of the inverse of what we'd expect. And if the thyroid function is really high, the TSH is low or suppressed. So Graves' disease, just to review a little bit, is an overactive thyroid gland that's an autoimmune condition. So your body, for one reason or another, is producing too much thyroid hormone. It's your thyroid gland can get enlarged. And there are several options to treat it. And we touched earlier that there's medications that can treat it. Those aren't really a good permanent option. Radioactive iodine, as you mentioned here, is another option. And that is a pretty good choice in certain patients, and it can treat this problem definitively. One of the downsides of radioactive iodine is that the effect of it can kind of change over the years, and sometimes people can get either a recurrence of Graves' disease where the thyroid becomes overactive years after it was treated successfully, or the opposite problem is over time the remaining thyroid cells that still didn't get completely irradiated will still fail over time. And then that's what happens when your TSH starts to go up over years. That means that your thyroid is not making enough thyroid hormone anymore. And that's one of the reasons why thyroid tests need to be checked at least annually when somebody's had Graves' disease to see if somebody needs to be on some thyroid hormone over the time.
What about if you don't have Graves' disease? Do you recommend thyroid tests for somebody at X age or not at all unless you have a symptom?
Right. In general, if without any symptoms, there's no indication to check a thyroid test annually. Now, a lot of people will check them for a variety of vague symptoms, which is reasonable. But if somebody's totally healthy and without symptoms, there's really low yield of checking a thyroid hormone.
And a thyroid test consists of what? Is it a blood test?
Yeah, so in terms of blood tests to check the thyroid function, it starts with a blood test, the TSH, as we mentioned. There's also a couple of thyroid hormones called T3 and T4 and a couple of different variants of each that can be tested as well.
Dr. Ujesh Shah joins us today. And by the way, you mentioned Graves' disease being an autoimmune disease. Is this correct?
Correct.
You know, one recurring refrain that I've heard on this program from various doctors is that sometimes these autoimmune diseases sort of pop up for no reason. Do we know why Graves' disease happens?
That's a good question. And no, we don't have a great answer. We know that autoimmune conditions can kind of tend to run together, and people who have one are more prone to another autoimmune condition. We do know that there's a couple different specific molecules that our body produces that stimulate the thyroid gland, but we don't know why some people develop this and not others.
Our number here on Medical Monday is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Here's another question that came in via email from, we'll just say JP, and it's about Graves' disease. This email says, I've been diagnosed with Graves' disease and I've been taking Tapazole for about 2.5 months, have gained about 9 pounds since beginning the medication. My most recent lab work shows T3 and T4, which we just talked about, as normal, but TSH is still very low at 0.007. From my research, I understand this as being subclinical hypothyroidism. My doctor said to come back in 6 weeks to reassess. Question, what is the end game with this situation? What should I expect in terms of how long I'll need to be on meds? Is there any way to regulate thyroid naturally? Hate the thought of taking meds forever. Diet changes? What to do? And that's from JP.
great question. So just as a correction, I think the TSH was mentioned as being very low, which is would be hyperthyroidism, and it can be subclinical hyperthyroidism in this case.
Okay.
And so you mentioned the T3 and T4 are normal. We know that those medications can be corrected quicker than the TSH can in patients that have problems with their thyroid. Tapazole is also known as methimazole. It's a medication that's used for Graves' disease to kind of slow down the production of thyroid hormone. And it sounds like it's kind of doing its job in that the T3 and T4 have normalized. But the TSH just takes a little bit longer to get back to normal. Now, the treatment of Graves' disease starts with these medications. And what we know is that some people, this is all that's needed. And it can be sometimes over time, the dose of this medication can be weaned off to the point where it's no longer needed. And the theory is that the thyroid itself kind of just burns out from being overactive to the point where it's not causing a problem anymore. Unfortunately, not everybody has that problem. Some people's thyroids continue to remain overactive, and in that case, remaining on the medications is one option, but typically not the best long-term option, and that's when these other options, such as radioactive iodine or surgery, come into play to kind of treat this problem definitively.
And you're a surgeon, so I assume you'll answer this question with choice one, but given the choice between radioactive iodine or surgery, do you take number one, surgery, or number two, radioactive iodine?
Yeah, I typically do recommend surgery, but there's always caveats. And so each patient's a little different. And there are some benefits to radioactive iodine over surgery. So the main benefit with radioactive iodine is avoiding surgery and the risks that can be involved with surgery. And this is great for patients who are at an elevated risk to be under general anesthesia for the surgery or who are on blood thinners where they're at a higher risk for bleeding at the time of surgery. So there are definitely patients that where radioactive iodine is beneficial. Surgery is better in the sense that it can treat the problem a little bit more definitively, whereas with radioactive iodine, sometimes people still have Graves' disease afterwards, still are hyperthyroid. And surgery is a little bit quicker in terms of getting patients back to having normal thyroid functions.
How long can you, and maybe it's forever, live with Graves' disease before it would kill you? If it was untreated, will it kill you?
Unfortunately, untreated Graves' disease can kill you, and that's something that we fortunately see fairly rarely nowadays, something called a thyroid storm, thyrotoxicosis. Just overproduction of the thyroid hormone most notably will cause an overactive heart, which can lead to a heart attack just from the heart being so active where it can't even get enough blood to keep itself functioning. So, like I said, that's unfortunately a fairly rare problem nowadays, but untreated, it definitely can have bad effects like that.
We're joined today on this Medical Monday by Dr. Uja Shah, and the number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Always break in during the bass solo. It's a Medical Monday. We're joined by Dr. Uja Shah, and the number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Let's go back to the phones. I was only kidding. Bass players are some of the finest people I know. I know two. Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
Are robotics used internally to treat or do surgery on the thyroid through the trachea, or is it still mainly external incision?
Yeah, so good question. Most commonly with thyroid surgery, it is an external incision in the front of the neck. Robotics have been attempted to be used for thyroid surgery with incisions in a couple different places. Some people would have tried using incisions just under the armpits in the front. There are some people now doing the surgery through incisions in the base of the mouth on the inside of the lower lip. I kind of touched about this on this earlier, but doing thyroid surgery using the robot from any of these approaches unfortunately has been shown to have slightly increased risk of complications. And so there are very, very few people that would even offer this surgery nowadays, and I don't think that the increased risks associated with the robotics for thyroid surgery are worth these potential benefits of a small incision in the front of the neck.
Jim, thanks so much for the call. It's Medical Monday on WAMC. The number is 800-348-2551. We go to Queensbury. Susie, you're on.
Oh, hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I was meeting with an endocrinologist about recently diagnosed osteoporosis, and in some blood work, my parathyroid came out elevated at 102, but my calcium is normal at 8.9. And so I'm wondering if it ends up being hyperparathyroidism, I think that's what they call it, and they remove it, will that have an effect on my osteoporosis?
Yeah, so in general, when people have primary hyperparathyroidism, we see, in terms of blood work, both an elevated PTH, or parathyroid hormone level, and an elevated calcium level. And we know in those patients that a lot of them do have osteoporosis. Osteoporosis is actually one of the strong indications for surgery in that case. Mm. Unfortunately, there's a lot of confusion when the blood work isn't that clear cut. When the calcium levels are normal or the calcium levels are low even, but the parathyroid hormone levels are high, then it's a little bit more of a cloudy picture. There are other reasons for the parathyroid hormone to be elevated that can be treated. Most commonly, this is what's called secondary hyperparathyroidism, which can be from low vitamin D levels. And so that's one of the things that's often checked at the same time as your blood calcium and your parathyroid hormone levels.
Yeah, in fact, it was my vitamin D was at 12.8, and but now it's back up to like 31.
Right. So, yeah, that's great that that's been treated. And so the next step is then to kind of just see how your blood calcium levels and your parathyroid hormone levels do over time. And in general, when patients' parathyroid glands remain overactive, then yes, treating the parathyroid disease will improve bone density and improve osteoporosis, if that's what's going on.
Oh, cool. Great. Thanks for your answer.
Thanks for the call, Susie. We're joined today by Dr. Ujesh Shah of St. Peter's Health Partners, and the number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Johnstown, New York. Chris, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My daughter was diagnosed with borderline Hashimoto's disease when she was 17 or 18. She's 27 now, and she is still borderline. Is there any definitive test that she can have to figure out whether she actually has it or doesn't have it?
Yeah, so just to kind of make sure everyone's on the same page, what Hashimoto's disease is another autoimmune condition that attacks your thyroid. And the most common effect of it is that your thyroid becomes underactive or hypothyroid. And so the main thing to check is whether or not the thyroid is functioning normally or not. We know that some patients with Hashimoto's disease will initially have high thyroid levels and then eventually go down. There are several different blood tests to look at specific antibodies that your body's making to attack your thyroid. But sometimes people can have Hashimoto's disease when none of those are active or are detected. And so sometimes there is no definitive treatment. The main thing to worry about, though, is to make sure that the thyroid function tests remain normal.
Chris.
Okay. Well, thank you for your answer.
Thanks a lot for the call. We're joined by Dr. Ujesh Shah. Now, is it easier in general to deal with a thyroid that is underactive or overactive?
In general, with the medications, it's easier to deal with a thyroid that's underactive because we have good medications that can be exogenous thyroid hormone. Levothyroxine is the most common form that we take, and it's a pill that, yes, has to be taken every day, but is a very good supplement and that basically replaces our thyroid function.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, and the email address is voxpopwamc.org. I was giving the number and the email address while I was handing you an email. Based on your reaction, I will in fact read it because I think it's true. Maureen writes, I don't have a relevant medical problem, but I believe I recognize Dr. Shah's voice from high school. I think I was his English teacher. Please give him my best.
Thank you so much.
True enough.
Thank you so much, Ms. Tremblay.
All right, now let's go back to our calls. And Joanne in Queensbury. Joanne.
Yes, good afternoon. I had a brain aneurysm probably 10 years ago, and following that in my, you know, recovery, I was diagnosed with adrenal fatigue. I've been to two naturopaths, and they each tell me, different naturopaths, and they each tell me that I have low energy. Is there anything that can be done for, you know, the adrenal fatigue?
Yeah, let me know, because I have low energy as well. What do you got, Doc?
Yeah,
this is really low.
Right. That's one of those diagnoses that's really hard to, number one, pinpoint, and number two, treat. And so there's really no specific good blood test or treatment really for this problem, unfortunately. Most of the time, we know that the adrenal glands are able to accommodate changes to our body and respond and make enough hormones, but adrenal fatigue is something that's I don't think we have a good sense of yet in the medical community.
All right, John.
Oh, darn. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call. It's Medical Monday on WAMC. Dr. Ujesh Shah is our guest from St. Peter's. The number is 800-348-2551. Danny in Saratoga. Danny, you're on.
Oh, yes. Hello. Thanks for having me, doctor.
Of course.
All right.
I just had a question about the robotics in the surgery. Who is really performing the surgery?
Yeah, good question. So robotics have been used now for a while, and the robotic use in surgery really is an extension of the surgeon itself. So the surgeon is controlling the robot. So when I'm doing the surgery, I am controlling the robot. The main goal with the robotics in surgery is that it helps us be a lot more precise with what we're doing. Instead of having our fat fingers in some place, we have small little fine instruments that help us get to areas that we do control with our own hands.
All right, Danny.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much. You know, you said it at the beginning of the show that robotic surgery not used very much with thyroid because of the presence of vocal cords and other stuff in there. And to me, it almost seems counterintuitive. You'd think the robot would be much, you'd map it and it would be much more precise, but you trust your hands.
Absolutely. It's still a lot more precise seeing it with my own eyes and putting my own hands in there to control things.
Are you an outlier there, or is most of the medical community in your on your side?
I think most people are on the same side, yeah.
We're joined by Dr. Ujesh Shah. The number is 800-348-2551. We go to Oneonta, and Gail is on. Hello, Gail.
Hi. Got a question in regards to parathyroid, as well as I wanted to mention that I was diagnosed years ago with Hashimoto's thyroiditis. But my dad was diagnosed with hyperparathyroid. And since that time, I found out that the breast or the collarbone, my collarbone is really enlarged on one side. And I've heard that can be related to the same thing. And I was wondering about exposures to different chemicals, if that can be a cause, seeing as how I may have had it same time he did.
Yeah, honestly, we don't have good answers to that, but probably there is some relation to environmental exposures that can cause problems with pretty much any of the endocrine glands, including the parathyroid disease. But I don't think there's really great evidence that we know of so far that can link any specific chemicals to overactive parathyroid glands.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. Medical Monday today, and let's see, we'll go to Pittsfield. Nora, you're on.
Hello.
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 Hello. I have had radiation for Graves' disease years ago, and I am on Synthroid. It varies how much. I believe that most women have thyroid issues. I'm 72. And I was wondering about this new process that I heard of, which is called TED. Could you explain that to me?
TED.
Yeah, that TED stands for thyroid eye disease. And that is associated with Graves' disease specifically, where there are eye problems. And it's kind of another one of those things that we don't know fully why it's going on. But we know that patients that have Graves' disease often have what's called exophthalmos, where their eyes kind of seem like they're popping out of their heads and sticking out in front. And that can cause problems because the eyelids can't close all the way, causing dry eyes, but also can cause vision problems. There is a known association with people who have thyroid eye disease and get radioactive iodine, that the thyroid eye disease can actually get worse for some reason. And again, we don't know the reason mechanism behind that. We do know that comparing patients that get radioactive iodine versus surgery for Graves' disease, that the thyroid eye disease actually doesn't get as bad when people have surgery. So that's one of the reasons why surgery is favored over radioactive iodine in that case specifically.
Nora.
Oh, yes.
Did you want to follow up?
Well, thank you. That's very interesting, and I will pursue that.
Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. I tell you what, it's getting like it to be a class reunion here, Doctor. I was Ujesh Shah's soccer coach for a few years. Hi from Coach Hecht.
Okay. Hello. Thanks so much.
Dr. Shah, this is your life. All right, here we go. Justin in Kingston. Justin, you're on.
Yeah, hi, doctor. Thanks for taking my call. I have just a quick question. My 25-year-old daughter was sent to the emergency room, and she had pains in her stomach, and lo and behold, she had a 6.5-centimeter tumor and her adrenal gland removed, and they used 3 robotics on it also. But when they biopsied the tumor and the adrenal gland, they found that she had a very, very rare cancer, blood cancer, called adrenocortical ACC, cortinology. And I just wanted to ask, they said that it was a cancer that creates micro blood cells in the blood and attaches to different organs of your body. And it's an aggressive cancer. And the only thing they can do, they don't have much research on it. They said it's like 3 people out of every 1 million are diagnosed with this very rare cancer. There's not much research to diagnose on it because of how rare it is. And the only thing they can do is monitor her with PET scans and CAT scans and blood tests every 3 months. Is that accurate? I mean, is it going to heal or is she going to get better?
Yeah, as you mentioned, this ACC or adrenocortical carcinoma is actually a very rare disease. And so you're right, there is not a lot of great research. We know that the mainstay of treatment is to do surgery to remove anything that's known to have cancer, which in this case sounds like it was the adrenal gland. And there is always, unfortunately, a chance with any cancer in general, but specifically with this type of cancer, that it can spread elsewhere. And that's the why people, unfortunately, can die from cancers in general. But there are not a lot of great systemic treatments for this. Definitely getting surveillance on a regular basis is one of the mainstays. And we do know that sometimes if we see the cancer come back in some other place, we can sometimes do surgery in those places to treat it. But being closely watched by an oncologist is really important for this disease.
Justin.
And just one point, doctor. So on that other side of the coin, what's your chances of the cancer disappearing?
Yeah, it depends.
I mean, is it there? That's it? That's a fact?
Right. I mean, obviously, it sounds like at least her main source of cancer did disappear. It's hard to tell without knowing the specifics of the type of cancer. There's a lot of different subtypes that can change the prognosis.
Okay, Justin. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it very much. Does it make you a little nervous when a cancer just goes away?
It's a good sign if cancer goes away. I mean, if it goes away after having surgery, it's to take it out. That's the goal.
Yes, yeah. Of course. All right, let's go to Bob in Glenville. Bob.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I had my thyroid removed in 2001. They detected thyroid cancer, and lo and behold, they dissected it a couple of times, couldn't find any, but I developed a hematoma the night after the surgery, and they had to go in again. So occasionally I have trouble swallowing. Once in a while, certain type of pills will get stuck. I mean, I'm on 137 a centroid, but I mean, should I be checked out again, or is that just a condition of having them going in twice?
Yeah, that's one of the complications from thyroid surgery is afterwards having some difficulty speaking. We talked about those vocal cord nerves earlier, and they help with swallowing as well. It could be related to some nerve dysfunction. It could also just be related to some scar tissue that develops and often does get better over time, but some people chronically have issues. There's unfortunately not great ways to deal with it other than trying to avoid causing these damages at the time of surgery. Hematomas are one of the things that can happen rarely after any thyroid or parathyroid surgery, and as you unfortunately learn, second surgery is needed, but and that may increase the amount of scar tissue or potential injury to things around that area.
So kind of something you just have to live with?
Yeah, if it causes major problems, there are procedures that people can do endoscopically and to try to help things depending on what exactly is going on. But it's not something that's easily treatable.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. We only have a couple of minutes here left with Dr. Uja Shah. Let's go to Bennington, Vermont. Ramona, you're on.
I want to know what the dangers are when your thyroid starts flipping from hyper to hypo, because that's what my thyroid is doing.
Yeah, so just taking each of them separately, when patients are hyperthyroid, that's an overactive thyroid gland, there's we talked about the problems with the heart that can occur, but in kind of a less severe form can cause weight loss, it can cause bone thinning, decreased appetite. The opposite problem can happen with hypothyroidism, with weight gain, kind of a slow metabolism overall. And there are end effects on some organs, specifically the bones and the heart, that can occur when the thyroid is not maintained in a normal state. It's a finicky gland in some people where it's hard to maintain a normal value, but and it can change over time with diseases that we've talked about, such as Graves' disease or Hashimoto's thyroiditis, where depending on the number of factors, your body's reaction is either to make more or less thyroid hormone.
Oh, okay. So it will affect the heart. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, it definitely can, unfortunately, over time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Well, we only have about 25 seconds here left with Dr. Uja Shah. How many people in this country are afflicted with thyroid issues every year? I've never seen any stats on this. I don't think I know anyone personally.
Yeah, it's a fairly common with thyroid diseases. We know that about half the people who are above the age of 50 have at least a thyroid nodule. The chance of them being cancer in a nodule is only about 5% of those nodules. But there's probably a good chance that in any group of people, if somebody at least has a nodule in their thyroid. So it's very common.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And you got through it all right. And how many people know you? You got your soccer coach. Hey, thanks for being here, man.
Of course. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Support comes from Villa Veritas Foundation, Kerhonkson, New York, helping fight the epidemic opiate crisis both locally and throughout the country with specialized programs, education, and support for men, women, and families. VillaVeritas.org for inquiries. Once again, thanks to Dr. Uja Shah for joining us today from St. Peter's Hospital. Thank you for listening. Great calls, terrific emails. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Phone screened on this Medical Monday by Joe Makowitz. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Polly Law, Paul Rapp, and Bill Westwood will join us once again for the Copyright Forum. We will protect your intellectual property if you have any. That's tomorrow at 2. We'll see you for that.